Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Hey, two in the books, one to go. Final hour of the show. Believe it or not, it's the Bee Gees. It's the Bees, being Brendan and myself. It's the G of Pauly G, Paul Gallant, filling in for Jeremy, who is out ill today as we roll through a Tuesday edition of the Bees and get to all kinds of things. Very NFL heavy early on, and then we got to a little Kelly Eco there in the last two segments talking some Rockets leading up to the trade deadline, which is great. Howard Balzer, by the way, going to join us at 2:30. Hall of Fame writer that has a lot to say, I'm sure, about what happened on one of the greatest divisional playoff weekends in NFL history. Oof. But as we continue, Paulie, look, I'm a Packer fan. You're a Patriot fan.
Mm-hmm.
I found out, including our own Patrick Creighton, people that I never would have imagined weren't Packer fans or were waiting for an opportunity to pounce when my team didn't succeed, and I'm sure you deal with that all the time with Patriots.
It was a little different, I think, this time around with the Packers over the weekend, where I think a lot of people that never have watched a football game in their lives were joining in on the fun and dumping on Aaron Rodgers.
What I found out with Pat is it has nothing to do with the Packers, and he'll be a Packer fan again when Aaron Rodgers leaves. But because of all of the off the field with Rodgers, there was a new level of disdain for the whole body of what is the Packers.
My disdain for Aaron Rodgers really comes from this offseason. Bro, this team's been 40 and what, 13 the last
39 wins in 3 years.
Yeah. I mean, so shut up. What, you have it so bad? Really, just shut up. Like that to me, I don't care about any of the needle stuff really at all. I only care about how much of a baby he was this offseason, considering that team was damn good, and he's complaining about the roster constructor. That guy made that roster as good as possible for you the last couple of years, and here you are in the cold, not being able to out-duel Jimmy Garoppolo. I mean, it comes down to that. Garoppolo didn't play well, but look, Rodgers is better than what we saw from him in that game.
And I've been honest in the fact that, look, I know how bad it's going to be the day he walks out the door, no matter how bad the playoffs have been. I've compared Rodgers' playoffs to James Harden's in a lot of ways, Harden minus a championship, but other than that, as good as they've been in the regular season, there's been short. He's 11-10 in the playoffs. I also have never defended a single thing that he's done off the field because you can't. So it's interesting because you had those comments, and I realized, especially with social media, that you are kind of that newfound generation of being able to be critical of other fan bases in particular. So why don't you set up the folks a little bit in terms of your feelings towards the Titans fans?
I hate Titans fans. I think they're stupid people. I don't think they know anything about football. I think that they stumbled into this organization that they stole away from Houston, and they used this as their pacifier for the reality that the Tennessee Volunteers are never going to be a good football program. So they think they know about the NFL, but they honestly don't. They constantly want respect from everybody, and yet here they are having a one seed three times and blowing it with that first playoff game that they play, all three of those times, coming up 1 yard short in the Super Bowl. And they constantly want people to give them respect. And then you watch the game that took place on Saturday night, and it was delicious. They will never matter. Your team will never matter. And, this was a drunken rant that I did.
You guys don't matter. You never will. And it's good that you had a reminder of just how little you matter. You're a really sensitive fan base. You get really worked up when people don't respect you. You're just begging for the world to look at you and look at you as something other than the team that lost in the Super Bowl by 1 yard. You're the team that's been a one seed and one and done now three times. Eat that. You will never matter, ever. And I say this as a Patriots fan whose team probably never will be good again. Guess what? This bad team that you saw in the playoffs get killed by the Bills, they killed you. That team did. You will never matter. And it's glorious to me. It's delicious. So enjoy your dirt blanket tonight. See you next year.
Dirt blanket and delicious in the same rant.
Yeah.
Okay. so you weren't aware of yesterday's conversation then?
No.
But my partner Jeremy decided to throw out there in the never-ending saga that is the current team in Houston, the Texans and Deshaun Watson, would you be willing to trade Deshaun Watson, Houston, to get that glory that the Titans don't deserve back for your franchise? The history, the retired numbers, the Derek on the helmets, the color scheme, the love you blue. I said, no, there's no way. There's got to be much more involved in it than just that.
Well, beggars can't be choosers right now when you have someone like Deshaun Watson with all of his massages on his record, allegedly. So I like Jeremy's line of thinking here. And as somebody who hates the selection that the Texans have available as far as vintage sports gear, seeing as they have no history and they don't have any good vintage sports gear, I'm all about the vintage sports gear. Please, I want it. I want to be able to wear a Houston football thing that's not associated with those losers in Tennessee. Well, I don't want to have, I have a Houston Oilers shirt, Joel. I want to be able to wear it and not say, oh, are you a Titans fan? No, because I'm not. Ew, gross.
But see, here's the thing. And we even had to tell this to Jeremy during the season because he found some new gear with Oilers on it and didn't realize the biggest slap in the face was the fact that not only do the Titans have all the history and everything like that, they were allowed for their throwbacks.
Yeah.
To wear the Oilers uniforms, to get the T-shirts and the hats with the Oilers Derek on it. And I think that is just the travesty. I was going to tweet it. I said this yesterday. I was going to tweet Saturday afternoon. Karma, that is the true definition of karma being a bitch, is when you decide to taunt another team's and another city's heyday because you have the ridiculous rights to don't deserve.
Yeah.
You got what you got in karma by losing that game on Saturday.
Joel, these cannibals came after me on social media because I called them out for stealing and wearing essentially their ex's clothes. Because that's what they're doing. You're wearing your ex's clothes. Congratulations. Does it fit? Probably not, because you're fat. It is, I think, despicable.
But what if you have just unbelievable pecs like you do?
Mine are nice. But see, they don't have that.
Okay.
They don't have that. And the thing that has bothered me the most about Titans fans and the sensitivity thing that I mentioned, there have been three times where I've had these random, hey, Titans fans are coming into my mentions, sending me threats in my Instagram, sending my threats on Twitter. I'm like, whatever, I don't care. Online threats aren't real. But when it was one, when I broke the story that Jake Locker was getting benched for Zach Medenberger, why was that? I don't know. The second time was when I said, Marcus Mariota isn't good. You guys just don't understand football, so you don't understand how, you know, he's not good. I was ahead of the curve on everybody on that one. And then the last time was when I brought this up, when the Oilers have, the Titans have this, like, oh, respect Oilers Heritage Days. Like, not one person in Nashville knows who Earl Campbell is. They don't know who he is. One of the best running backs of all time. They don't know who he is. They don't care. They don't care about what he did here.
Well, Joel, I was just curious, like, the reason I put this video in our rundown is because I'm curious if you or anybody has this much, like, joy in the suffering of other fan bases.
I hate them. Well, yes, it's amazing.
So, to Paulie's Patriot and experiences that he just highlighted, the one thing that I can tell you, and you know this, is, like, I find out more about the loathing, just disgust that people have for the Packers when they fail. And so, being in a division that is as passionate as you know with your Lions, Bears. Mark on Twitch knows with the Bears, you know, friends of mine that are Vikings fans, that it never goes away, it never dies. Now, it's different for me, right? Now, I might have said this growing up when we had 20 straight losing seasons, never sniffed the playoffs, were god-awful, and I had the audacity to be a Walter Payton fan because he was an awesome player on a good team as opposed to all the players on the Packers. But I've had so much success in the Favre and Rodgers era. As much as I was highlighting they should have been to more Super Bowls and won them, it's still what I tell people even about the loss the other day. We won 39 games in the last three years in the regular season. You know what that means to me? That means to me that I had more Sunday nights into Mondays that were positive experiences where I was a great guy to be around, as opposed to like the Texans fans that had to deal with 4-12s and then last season and all the shortcomings where they're just pissed off at the result and pissed off at the way they got there. So I don't have it that much, but maybe that's because I've been on the good end of the last 20-some years.
Yeah, it definitely is that. I mean, for me, it's 100% that. And I know that I'm not going to have much longer where I can act arrogant and condescending and look down on people. But damn it, I'm going to wear the hell out of that as long as I can, because it's fun. There's nothing more fun than telling a person who roots for a sports team, because this is so stupid as it is anyway, right? The trash talk that we have, there's nothing more delicious than telling someone like they don't matter. But the Titans don't matter. They have not mattered. And any person who lives in Houston who is still a Titans fan, you are a loser. Like, what are you doing with your life? All those people that were at NRG
Titan
Stadium
fan
on Sunday,
Hugo, that's a loyal listener. Don't change the channel regularly, but I can understand you being offended.
Can you explain? Can you explain why, though? Like, why? Like, they're not good. Like, if they were good, that would be one thing.
But that was their team. So they still feel like that's their team playing in another
city. They
left
you. They left you. They said, well, leave you on the way out. But Adams owns the team. They left you. They left. Like, that's what I don't get about the Houston Titans fans. And I did not know it was as bad as it was until I went to that regular season finale.
I saw you do that.
And all the people acting as cocky as they were, I was like, wait, what is wrong with you? Like, you beat the Texans by like 3 points or whatever. It was a close game. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we're going into the playoffs. You guys feel confident? Oh, I don't get them.
Okay, Brandon, on the flip side for you, because obviously I always say everybody knows that my first love is the Packers, but if they're not playing the Texans, I'm a fan of the Texans. I want them to do well. I cover them on a daily basis. But here's the thing that bothers me. Every time they go to that end zone shot in Nashville, and I got to see Earl Campbell, and I got to see Bruce Matthews, and I got to see all the retired numbers and go, you don't deserve those numbers in your building. Mm-hmm. You had nothing to do with anything that they did when they did it. And now suddenly, because of a stupid ownership family and what they had to have when they left in order to allow an expansion franchise to come to Houston and all that other BS, they get this. They're not doing anything with it anyway, but it makes no sense to me.
But it's because we have to be honest here. As much as we all hate Bud Adams, Houston failed. I mean, the Sonics, when they moved from Seattle to Oklahoma City, they had a clause where these Thunder are not allowed to wear their stuff.
Right.
Ever. They fought for that. And we've also seen, you know, how the New Orleans Pelicans, who were not too long ago the New Orleans Hornets, just gave the history back to Charlotte. Things can be worked out city to city. Things can be worked out organization to organization. The problem is the Texans are too stubborn to admit that the Houston Oilers were a team that played football here before them and had slightly more success than the Texans did, just a little bit. They're too proud to admit that. And on the way out, I think people were so turned off by the whole display that they said, you know what, we're not going to fight to keep these things in town. And it's a shame because I think the person...
Paulie, what I said yesterday, too, to your point, before you get on anything else, to your point on the just the fact that from the Oilers love you blue, there's a reason why the Rockets, who sucked last year, their city jersey was Oiler blue.
Yeah.
It wasn't because they were showing homage to anybody. They were trying to make some coin over the fact that the true love is that color associated with their real football team.
They look good.
Hated them.
You didn't want them?
I hated them because as a marketing perspective, you never take another franchise, especially in your same city's colors and brand, when you're building your own, right? You're essentially saying their brand's better than ours. And whether it's true or not, you know how much the people I worked for were passionate about that kind of stuff. Like, that's a no-no.
Well, it was better than the melting communism look that they had for 20 years. I'm glad that they moved on from that, but they should go back to the 93, 94 look. The things with the
pinstripes?
Red, like, the
Yao Ming Chinese national team jerseys?
Yeah, those jerseys were awful.
Okay, well, they're still around.
Never again, please.
Okay, well, all right, we got more to get to. Howard Balzer at 2:30 as we get his perspective on a lot of things going on in the NFL, including the just-released news. If you missed it, Sean Payton stepping away from the New Orleans Saints. Interesting to see what's next for him. Before we go to the break, I again want to tell you about my good friend Doc Linville. It's simple. Doc Linville gets results. And the fact of the matter is, as guys get older, you know what? They lose less. They lose more and more of their hair. And in asking the questions that I asked in my consultation, I found out that the one place that genetically you just don't lose your hair is what I would call the wreath, the sides and the back. And a lot of cases like mine, I had a ton of hair except for at my hairline. And Doc Linville was the one that called the meeting with me and said, I can help you. And I said, what are you talking about? He said, do you want your old hairline back? I was like, well, I haven't had my old hairline since, you know, college days and a little bit after that. He goes, doesn't matter. I can get it back for you. And so then we started talking about the entire procedure called neografting. And he walked me through how it's my own hair. It's not sprays and foams and medications and creams. No, it's your own hair. And essentially in a gardening term, you're taking sod from places where you have a ton of it and locating it to where you don't have any. And you're making a substantial difference in the appearance of your lawn. Only this time it's your hair. And they've done wonders for me. I'm 3 months in. You won't see the full results for 6 to 9 months. But I see all the follicles on a daily basis getting thicker and stronger. And that coverage area is still there. And that original hairline he drew on with a Sharpie It's actually there and growing on a daily basis. He can do the same thing for you. And for listeners, you get that consultation I went through for absolutely free. It's normally $150. He's actually done a price freeze for ESPN listeners through the month of January, so you can still get in on this. Go to 975hair.com. That's 975hair.com. Set up that free consultation. Talk to Doc Linville and his staff. Ask those tough questions. And after his answers, if you think you should do it, you can do like I did and go through the procedure. It's painless. You're going to be back on your feet doing the same things you do normally on the next day. And you're going to realize with a 95% success rate, what he does is going to stick around, and that's going to make a difference in your life. Check out Doc Linville today.
Razor-sharp commentaries delivered with a purpose. You found the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, we're rolling through what has been a fun, almost a reunion tour for the Bee Gees, but for me and Pauly that have been friends for a long, long time, but really always crossed paths after Rockets games in handing off shows, but never did one together, and it's been fun. I apologize to Brendan during the break, for those of you that don't have Twitch, because it doesn't exactly have the precise structure that a Jeremy Branham formatted show would, but I think it's had a ton of fun and flavor and topical discussions that you guys have taken part in, so we appreciate you.
I've just missed talking to you. I mean, I don't think we've sat this long together.
Aside from passing in the hallways and me saying how great it was to have you back in town and all that stuff.
That's it.
Yeah.
This is the longest we've talked in a really long time. So yeah. I'm really thrilled to be back, buddy.
It's awesome, and it's fun working together. So we're having some fun, and we're chopping it up. And by the way, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention with our Kelly Eco discussion, Rockets actually at home tonight against the Spurs. Again, I'm going to be the first to tell you guys this. And everybody knows, you know this more than anybody, how big of a basketball junkie I've been my whole life.
Oh, my goodness.
I have lost interest in the NBA. And it's just, normally, you know, I started.
As a whole? Just this year? Just right now?
Like, with no football last night. And I still did it to some degree. But, like, whenever there's not football, even during the week in the NFL season, I'd be looking for the best NBA games. I'd be watching certain teams.
You got that league pass.
Yeah, but it's so unwatchable in so many cities now. And the way they play, and the style of play, it's like, it's just, and then with the Rockets losing, it's like, I don't really want to watch them get pounded every night.
Tanking,
either.
Load management, the amount of games in the season are all
and
factors.
And load management's a good key, too.
I mean, you never know who's going to play on a night-to-night basis. And it stinks because the playoffs are amazing. I mean, you know, I love every second of the playoffs. I try to get out, watch some of those games all day long, much like I would with a playoff game out at the bars with my friends. But getting to that point, it's hard, and it's hard to get people to really get into basketball this time of year. Like, even for me.
Well, but like everybody said, the NBA season doesn't start till Christmas Day. But this year, Christmas Day, there was an NFL doubleheader.
Exactly.
And they got trounced in the ratings, and everybody was more interested in the NFL than the NBA anyway.
It doesn't start until President's Day weekend, in my opinion. I mean, that's when I would start watching basketball games. And look, then you get into the home stretch, or right past the trade deadline, because people like to talk about the drama of the NBA a lot more, too, than they seem to like to talk about any regular season game. Because what does one regular season game really mean?
One regular season game, and I would tell you this because of what we heard even from the start of the season on. That game tonight, speaking of one regular season game, in years past, that would be must-see TV for me. It's the Lakers at the Nets, the two teams everybody was talking about could resurrect the whole rivalry, East Coast, West Coast, and all this different stuff. And I could care less that Anthony Davis is coming back tonight. And I don't know if Kyrie's playing or not, and I don't care.
That part.
And I know Kevin Durant's not going to play, but I'm like, if these are the stories I'm worried about, instead of, like, who's deeper and a better team overall, and how are they going to play, and how is this going to translate to the playoffs, then I'm not interested in the NBA like I used to.
There's too many games. I honestly feel that the college basketball schedule has the perfect amount of games for a regular season, and if they could find a way to shrink it to that many, then every single game would have a little more meaning. But the way that it is right now, there are too many games, much like in baseball, much like in hockey, and it just takes, I think, a lot away. And you can see why teams operate the way that they do, where they're resting players, or they're just, you know, not really giving their all. They know it's a long marathon.
So we got a text that said college basketball better than the NBA. It's not even particularly close. Yeah, college athletes play harder on every single play. Hard nosed defense. I'm a Texas Tech fan, so it's a standard with Texas Tech. NBA is hero ball crap with players taking off every other play, zero defense. Here's what I would rebuttal with that. Watch Penny Hardaway's Memphis Tigers. Watch John Calipari's Kentucky Wildcats and tell me that's structure. Tell me that's offense. Tell me that's not just recruiting the best recruits you can in the country and throwing the ball out there and saying, go get a W, fellas. It's embarrassing that Larry Brown is on Penny Hardaway's staff and they're playing that brand of basketball.
But do you have a choice? You're bringing these young kids in. They're 18, they're 19. They've been playing AAU as hired guns essentially for their entire life.
True.
And all of a sudden you're expecting them to change. Like that. The way that basketball, it's not just from a college perspective. It is from a young age where these kids are being sort of shown, hey, you need to do what you can to prove your worth, and it might not necessarily come as a result of playing with the team. I get why it happens like that. I don't even hate on it, you know? Hey, if you want to make this into a career someday, that's probably the way that you have to go about it. But it's not as much of a team deal.
So this has been my rant forever, and I've had this when people used to come at me when I was working for the Rockets years ago, saying, why are all these foreign players getting drafted higher than these American kids? And why are they so much better than the kids coming up in the United States? It was obvious to me then. It's even more obvious to me now. The most corrupt organization in all of the country is AAU basketball. And the fact that you take kids younger and younger and they start getting recruited. You talk about the silver spoon theory and what you just got done talking about too. A kid could be an eighth grader and they're running ISO plays and saying, here's the ball, they're getting out of the way, right?
Yeah.
Then when they get time to pick a high school, they're being recruited by high schools and they say, come to my school. It's going to be offense centered around you. You're going to have the ball in your hands. Best opportunity for you to get all you need to get to the next level. So by the time they get to college, it's one and done with the same thing, a program that says we're giving you the world, or they have options now to go get money to play professionally for 1 year, and then they get drafted, and then they're in the NBA, and then they wonder why when they get into the NBA for the first year and they don't know what a defensive or offensive rotation is or how to run an offensive set, and they're not fundamentally sound to make free throws or shoot the way the Euro kids do. Because in Europe, in European basketball, half the day is school, half the day is fundamentals, mm-hmm. and then they practice.
Yeah.
So to me, that's why I've always said, if you have any questions about why so many American players have been set back, it's by their own doing, because the system states you're not going to get noticed unless you play one-on-one. And when you get to a level where they don't play one-on-one anymore, you're so out of touch with how to do that, it takes you a longer learning curve to get it. And now it's almost like even in the NBA, they're more apt to let you play your way than tell them how to play your way.
Right. And college basketball has suffered as a result. I don't enjoy watching college basketball the way
either.
That did. I went to Syracuse. Syracuse is a great basketball school, usually, at least come tournament time, even if they play in the 2-3 zone. But, you know, go back and do yourself a favor and watch some of the documentaries that they have on some of those teams that played in the 1980s, like Georgetown in the 80s. I hate Georgetown as a school because Syracuse, they were arch rivals back in the day, but I mean, that Georgetown team that played against Villanova and Villanova upset them, that team was perfect.
Yeah.
I mean, University of Houston. Remember UH, a five-slam jammer?
Sure.
Like, holy crap. Like, those guys were playing with each other year in, year out, and they were so good. And now the product is, I think, woeful compared to
And
what
I was
going
to bring up the Villanova example from the standpoint of what coaching can do when you don't have all the top recruits, yeah. right? That's what Raleigh Massimino did at Villanova. When you mentioned Guy V., they ran whenever they could, but when they didn't, they knew how to run a set offense that went through Akeem. So you look at it, and Mikhail and I talk on a regular basis, and I'm like, Coach, there's so many teams, both NBA and college, I can't even watch. Like Golden State and the of all teams, the Toronto Raptors are two teams that actually run offensive systems where you can actually see the ball move, see the players make screens and cuts. That's basketball to me. When I watch, and especially in a Houston market in which they hate college basketball for some reason, and they've got one of the best coaches doing one of the best jobs on a yearly basis as what Sampson's doing at U of H, you're like, you guys are missing it, man. Because as much as you want the Rockets to do well, right under your own nose, and they're...
I'm with you there. They're fun to watch, actually. I enjoyed watching them in the tournament. It's a bummer that things went down the way that they did, especially because Baylor ended up winning it, and no offense, Baylor people, but... Not a big fan of dealing with some of you people in public. You know, like I was at a Chili's recently with some friends and we're talking about Alabama. This guy comes up to us and like, oh, you're talking about Alabama? Well, I went to Baylor. And we're like, no one was talking to you. But anyway, right. You know, the University of Houston's great. They're fun to watch. And that's a cool arena to go to, too, by the way.
I was going to say, since the Fertitta Center came and they actually gave Kelvin the resources, the practice facility in the arena, the fact that he's absolutely pulled a 180 midseason because of the players he's lost and went from a high-scoring, up-and-down kind of team to a low-post-driven team and still found success and only lost two games, you're missing it if you're not catching it. But Houston doesn't care for college basketball.
Is he the best coach in town, Sampson, or is it Dusty Baker?
Hands down, Kelvin Sampson. It's not even close.
I think what he has done is incredible. I really agree.
And Jeremy, you know, no one knows it better than Jeremy. And we talk more off the air than on the air because people just, they're not dialed in like they should be. But that's why Jay Billis the other day, we talked about this yesterday, that's why Jay Billis is making this hard push like we did for Guy V to say, Kelvin Sampson should be in the Basketball Hall of Fame. You're going to look at guys that made long-distance calls on a university phone as a blemish on him instead of looking at what he's been able to do time after time, year after year, no matter where he's gone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's always won. And I'm glad that he has stayed here. I am glad he has not been poached away because I am with you in that this has been, I would say, compared to the James Harden era, which I personally, Joel, I know we've had this conversation before. You know why. Having watched me play basketball, you know why I hated James Harden. I just felt like he was lazy. And I didn't enjoy the James Harden era. I was the guy who was always like, well, James Harden's not that good. Sorry, guys. I mean, he's great, but he's not, you know, that good. I've much more enjoyed watching this University of Houston run.
Yeah, that went over like a fart in church in Houston, by the way, especially when they were winning games. But at the same time,
who's right?
You know what? He was pretty successful. He just wasn't successful enough to win the championship.
Why do you think it was that he would always fizzle out in the playoffs? What was it? Was it different basketball? Was it different?
Well, I always said the game tightens up, whether you like it or not, and you're a running team or not. The game becomes a half-court game in the playoffs.
No doubt.
The referees don't call as much. The referee...
You always seem more tired. So
physicality becomes an issue. You know, your legs, because it's more of a pounding grind in every single game, becomes an issue. And like you said, and James didn't like the scrutiny. He didn't like the extra media. He didn't like the extra attention on when two defenders were being thrown at him in the playoffs. There were things that weren't the way they were in the regular season, and he couldn't adapt to that.
No, he never could. And they never adapted around him, to be fair, but it is a shame. I still can't believe sitting there watching them miss those 27 threes up at the top deck. I mean, I was...
Obviously, no one's ever going to forget it.
I was going to shave my head if they lost that game. Like, I made the on-air bet, and I mean, I was somewhat relieved, but I mean, I was just shocked. And everyone said, oh, classic Houston sports. Comes right back in. They should have won that game.
They should have, right? And they should. But again, like we were just talking about with coaching, they shouldn't have kept shooting the threes.
Right. No, they
when they were
on.
Missing at that level, and they still could have won the game.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we're going to continue to move on because Howard Balzer is going to join us next, and he's going to have plenty to say about the NFL, both what was played last weekend and what's coming up this weekend with the two conference championship games. Before we do that, I want to tell you about Frankie's Italian Kitchen. I've been telling you about him for quite a while. Chris told me this weekend that a lot of people have heard me say everything good about Frankie's Italian Kitchen, and they were filling up the restaurant this weekend. That's great. You should be the next in line because Frankie's Italian Kitchen is the best, the freshest, the most authentic Italian food in the city, and you've got to get there. If you're in the Richmond, Fulshear, Katy, Sugarland area, it's right in your wheelhouse. It's real close, and you're going to get all those benefits. If you got to drive from somewhere else, it's worth the drive. Because the one thing you realize when you get there, it's a family atmosphere. You don't have to get dressed up. It's not foo-foo. You can spread out. You can be comfortable. You can bring the whole family. The food is to die for. It's all with fresh ingredients. Everything on the menu is outstanding, and I've tried basically everything. And when you see another table get another dish, you're going to go, I'm coming back next time to get that because that looks amazing too. Because Chris Smith is not only the owner, he's the chef that prepares the food, and he wants you to make it feel like a home atmosphere, not a restaurant atmosphere, a family atmosphere. He does that also by making sure everything's affordable and that your wallet leaves as full as your belly because of the fact that it's not going to cost you an arm and a leg to take the family out for great Italian food. Check him out today. Tell him I sent you by. And while you're at it, go to frankiesitaliankitchentx.com. Check out the menu. Not only because everything there is awesome, but because of the fact he puts the weekly specials on there, and the weekly specials only last as long as the ingredients do. But when you see something new on the menu, you know you got to get there and try it because he's not going to sell you short both on the taste or the price and the quality. Check him out today, Frankie's Italian Kitchen, TX.com.
All teams covered, no talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, back! Final half hour of the program, and as we normally do, and the listeners love Howard, they can't get enough of the extended Killer Bee in one Howard Balzer, and so we are always honored to have Howard Balzer join us as he regularly does weekly, to talk about all things NFL. So, Howard, I welcome you in. I warn you, Jeremy is out sick today, so Paul Gallant is with us as well. And
not a B, huh?
No, well, we're going with
PG.
We're the Bee Gees today, Howard. The Bee Gees. And so we're staying alive until Jeremy hopefully stays alive and comes back. I got to ask you, you've been in this game a long time covering a lot. Have you ever seen not only a better game in what you saw between the Chiefs and the Bills, but a better divisional weekend than you saw in the NFL this last weekend?
I can't recall one. I mean, you go through your mind and you start trying to remember. You start looking through records and you say, no. I mean, no. And especially, I think, coincidentally, after the first weekend, which was billed, of course, as Super Wild Card Weekend, and four of the games were decided by a total of 90 points, to have walk-offs on every game, and in the last one, it was a last play of regulation that tied the game to send it to overtime. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if we'll ever see anything like that again. I guess certainly you never know, and ever is a long, long time, but that was just crazy phenomenal. I've tried searching for words to describe it, and I come up empty. I mean, we can come up with all the superlatives we want, and none of those words do what we saw over this past weekend justice.
Sunday was amazing. I went out to a bar to watch it with friends, almost watched it by myself. Glad I watched that out with a bunch of people because everyone was just losing their mind over and over again. But now that we've gotten off of the high of how good that game was, this is where, Howard, constantly we get people talking about, but this game could have been different. And we've been talking about overtime. And how overtime could potentially be different. So this is my theory, and I'm curious as to how you feel about it. I get it. We could try different kind of overtimes, but I think people are going to be frustrated with it generally. I feel like what we saw in that game between two quarterbacks who were that good is that defense needs to be given one of its hands back from behind its back. I feel like, you know, where we have gone from the days of Bill Polian whining about the rules and getting the five-yard contact in because his receivers couldn't get off jams in the Patriots-Colts games back in the day, I feel like you might need to give some of the defenders some of the leeway that they used to have, because I think you're going to see guys like Allen and Mahomes just cruise up and down the field. And when you get to the end of the game, these defenses are dead.
Yeah.
So you got to give them some help.
No, it's a great point, and I'm glad you brought that up, because you always hear the comment from those who like it the way it is. Well, you know, the defense has a chance to stop them. Well, but it's a different game now than it used to be. I actually had someone talk to me and say, well, let's go back to 1958 and sudden death with the Giants and the Colts. Well, it was a different game then. Mm-hmm. It wasn't as obviously offense-oriented as it is now. And so when you get two teams with quarterbacks like that, and like you said, a great point in terms of the defense having been out there through this, and of course in those last couple minutes, the defense hardly had a chance to rest. In any of those situations, they go through a drive. No, boom, they're right out there again. And everyone says, well, man, how did the Chiefs get down the field in 13 seconds to even be in position for that field goal to tie the game? Well, you know, the Bills defense had been out there not too long before that. So it's a great point. I don't know what the answer is, because the reality is the NFL loves it the way it is with offense. And it doesn't mean that all games are offense-oriented. We saw that on the Saturday games that, nobody reached 20 points in those two games. So certainly you'll get some games that where offense doesn't explode, but the majority of them do, with winning teams routinely getting 30 points these days. And so that's why I still believe maybe you're right that whatever system they have, no one will like. But I don't know how anyone could argue with a system that would at least give both teams a chance with the ball in overtime in a playoff game. Not necessarily saying extend it to the regular season, although I don't know what the big deal would be there, because how many ties do we get anyway? I mean, what was there, one tie in the NFL this past season? Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're, you know, I really, well, you don't want guys, they cut it to 10 minutes. We don't want guys out there too long. It's a safety issue. Players are worn down. And yeah, I get that. But it doesn't happen. It hardly happens at all. So I don't think that would be as big a deal. But at least in the playoffs, with so much at stake, each team, I believe, should have a chance for the football. And look at what we've seen in the last few years.
Well, Howard, that was my point yesterday when everybody was bringing attention to the overtime rules. Instead of saying, if you're the Bills, then you're number one defense. And I had Bills fans as friends that said the same thing. Our defense is supposed to be number one. We should have stopped them. But I said, look, I understand, just like in baseball, the runner on second base, to preserve arms and innings and time during the regular season. But in the playoffs, it's different. You change the rules and you make sure there is a clear-cut winner. And the only way you can really do that is to get both teams at least one opportunity to touch the football.
No, I'm with you. And then you hear those suggest, well, I'll do something like the colleges, right? Which is gimmicky. It's so gimmicky. It's ridiculous. And where they go to the two-point convert, dueling two-point conversions if the first two possessions, it's still tied. But you're giving the team the ball on the 25-yard line. And so play in the playoffs, at least, play the games the way it is played normally. Normally, I mean, hockey has gimmick. I think shootouts are crazy, and it determines playoff spots a lot of times. If you have a team that have ties and they happen to be really good in shootouts, I just don't like the gimmicky notion of it. I mean, heck, it would be like baseball. Okay, well, if we have a tie after 11 innings, then let's have home run derby. I mean, it would be absurd. It would be crazy. And so, like I said, I think most agree with what we're saying. There's always going to be some who don't agree with certain things, no matter what it is. But I think there's no doubt the league is going to be looking at this again with the competition committee and then with the league meeting in March. And will it change? Who knows? But, I mean, what's the big deal if you change it for the playoffs? I mean, the Patriots won a Super Bowl having the ball once against a totally gassed defense in that game with the Falcons. And then the Chiefs, of course, lost to the Patriots in the AFC Championship game because the Patriots had the ball first. So, like I said, it's not going to happen very often in the postseason, so at least be fair. That's my argument.
Howard, 2 hours ago, Sean Payton either retired or informed the Saints he's walking away, as Ian Rapoport put it. What do you think's next for Sean Payton? Have we seen the last of him in the NFL?
I don't think so. And, of course, you could argue, well, being in the NFL, does that mean broadcasting games? I don't think we consider that being in the NFL. You're part of the game, certainly. I just don't see him walking away. I think there was a growing – and I'm not saying there's a conspiracy issue at all, but he's had enough frustration, and he voiced it near the end of the season, with the things that seem to happen to his team all the time, whether it's bad officials' calls, whatever it might be. And then let's look at this. Now, we don't know what would have happened in that Monday night game that they had to play Miami and activate 14 players on game day from the practice squad, including, by the way, guys, four that had been signed to the practice squad that day. Yep. They weren't even there. They hadn't even practiced on the practice squad with the team. They had to add practice squad guys just to have them available in that game because they had so many players on the COVID list. And Ian Book had a start. They lose to Miami. And if they win that game, they're in the postseason. So I think he just reached a growing frustration level with the way things have continued to happen. And I think he'll coach again. I don't know if it'll be this year. There's all that, you know, chatter out there about the potential with the Cowboys. But, and maybe he steps away for a game. Who knows? I don't know. I don't think anybody can truly predict it. But I do absolutely think that we have not seen the last of Sean Payton as a head coach in the NFL.
Well, we hope we haven't heard the last of Howard Balzer on the Killer Bees for the year, because we're looking for, there's so much we didn't even get to about Brady and Rodgers and their future games this weekend and everything else. So hopefully we'll catch up with you again next week, Howard, same time with the same kind of conversations, because we love it. But have a great weekend. Enjoy the conference championships, and we'll catch up with you next week.
Look forward to it, guys. Take care. Always enjoy it.
There you go. Howard Balzer, Pro Football Hall of Fame voter, and a guy that we love talking to that is a listener favorite here on the Killer Bees. Before we go to the break and get a member of the Wheelhouse in for a little crosstalk, and that should be fun, with Pauly G, I want to tell you about Pixar Putt, because if you go to PixarPutt.com, you're going to find out that right now through March 20th down at Discovery Green, there is a amazing, and I mean amazing, putt-putt golf, mini golf that's going on, and it's right in the heart of downtown Houston. You know what Discovery Green is. You're right there with access to beer and bars and restaurants and food. And whether it's a date night or a great day or night out with the kids, or you just want to go out with the boys, and you know what? You want to kill some time and play 18 holes of mini golf before you actually go out and get some grub and go out and hit the town. This is the thing to do. It's new. It's different. And it's fantastic. It's all the favorite characters from all the favorite movies from Pixar. And it's all in 18 holes of mini golf. It's fantastic, and the only way you can get tickets is by going to PixarPutt.com. They have parking and ticket options. They're going to take care of you every step of the way, but it's a family atmosphere, or it's a great date night. I mean, Pauly G knows this better than anybody. You really don't get to know someone when you're at the movies for 2 hours when you can't talk to each other because you're trying to get the plot and figure out who done it. Well, when you're playing putt-putt golf, you guys are talking the whole time. You're getting to know each other. You're breaking the ice so that you can then break some bread and have some dinner and really have a great date night. It's a fantastic idea, but it's not here forever. It's only here till March 20th. So check it out right now. Go to PixarPutt.com, get all the details, get to Discovery Green, and let's play some mini golf.
Talking sports with you, not at you. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Now, from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, this is the time of the show when we crosstalk with our... In my regard, I can say this honestly. In Brendan's regard, I'm not sure in Jeremy Branham's... In his absence, it's unfair he's not here. But I'm not sure that if Jeremy Branham was here doing what I am doing today, he would say, a time to chat with our good friends at the Wheelhouse, because you guys... took aim at one Jeremy Branham yesterday.
Beef.
And I got to say, this has kind of been ongoing between him and Cody. But then I was told you'd kind of jumped in on this whole ridiculousness of the whole proposal of trade Deshaun Watson to the Titans to get back the history and the jerseys and the colors and the unis.
I love Jeremy Branham. Okay. I would not trade Deshaun Watson for the rights to the Oilers.
And I was with that point of view as well. From the standpoint of, that's just a sweetener. I mean, you need a whole lot more. He was adamant, and I don't know if he was pulling a Skip Bayless or not, but he was pretty adamant about the fact that, you know, at this point, it's worth doing.
Do you expect to get much for Watson?
Deshaun? Yeah. I expect to get at least 3 first-round picks minimum.
What if you don't get 3 first-round picks?
Then I'd be very disappointed in Nick Caserio's capability of being a general manager.
Okay. But that might not be in Nick Caserio's hands. That might be in whatever the Texans are going to be able to get, given that he's got, what, 23 charges against him?
It's nice to think that way, and it's also, you know, wise to put the pressure on Caserio, but it's kind of out of everybody's hands until we figure out what happens off the field.
Right. I agree, but I think given the facts of what we know, the fact that there's been no criminal charges, the fact of the matter is that it's been all civil suits. He's 26 years old, or will be, coming up in September, I believe, is his date of birth. He's going to play football at some point again, and when that happens, you got to make sure that when you do trade him, you get max value for a guy that's one of the best players at his position, who's under contract for the next several years.
I don't know that that's even max value, though. I don't, you know, I mean, that's the max value.
I don't know if you can get max value for a guy as good as Deshaun when he plays, right? But like, if Jamal Adams can go for 2 ones, and Laremy Tunsil could go for 2 ones, and Khalil Mack could go for 2 ones, now we're talking about a 26-year-old quarterback. When he last played, he led the NFL.
I was going to say, let's go back to when this started. This conversation started before we were privy to what happened off the field. And we were being told this is the biggest haul potentially in the history of NFL trades. Like, we know the Herschel Walker deal and the Ricky Williams deal and all those deals, but there was a lot of scuttlebutt about the fact that 3 number ones, we're talking about 5 total ones in a package that even could involve more than that, depending on the level of competition with teams that wanted to get involved. So to see where we've fallen to from that discussion.
And since we've fallen from that discussion, that's why I am okay entertaining getting some Oiler throwbacks.
I like the jerseys. Nice uniforms. I like the name.
Dude, it's not so good in them, Jeremy.
It's not worth 3 first-round picks, though. This trade could potentially, if they nail these picks, could potentially get the team back on the right path. They could have draft capital to draft future stars, to trade back in the draft and get even more picks. Yes, the Oiler jerseys are awesome. I wish they were still the Oilers here in Houston. But it's not worth trading one of the most valuable assets in the NFL for the rights to a name.
We look so good, Jake, if we wear those Oilers.
Yeah, but Cal McNair still owns the team. You're just putting more money in his pocket.
Well, yes. I mean, he needs it with all the coaches he's burning through.
But this is also where the discussion went with me and Jeremy when I pushed back by saying, look, do you want the rebuild instead of 5 to 7 years to go 7 to 10? Because essentially what you're passing on just to get history and uniforms and colors back is the fact that you're setting back the rebuild by probably 2 to 3 years based on what you're not getting in assets, draft capital, players, et cetera.
If you don't have a whole lot of faith in the rebuild operation as it is...
These are your guys! These are Patriot guys!
You may as well look handsome while you do. Well, yeah, we'll see. Look, I don't have as much skepticism in Caserio as some, but I think skepticism is warranted. I am... I'm really wondering if they're going to be able to get that three first-round pick haul, because I think you're right in that. That's where you start.
Well, that's what Miami was willing to give in November, and that was before he even settled any of the legal cases at that point.
Stephen Ross. I don't know where. I mean, and that's how you have Brian Flores available.
Someone will do it is my point. There's too many teams that need a quarterback, especially one as young and under contract like Deshaun Watson.
After watching what happened this past weekend and how valuable his value's quarterback up. Is, absolutely, the value has to start going up. And again, but the big caveat is we don't know what's going to happen off the field. Now I'm curious if you went to the if you go to the Church of Easterby, because if you're that much instilled in belief in Casario, you got to be one of the only guys in this town that believe Jack is going to be the franchise Turner as well.
My hope, and it's wishful thinking, I'll admit, is that he is removed from those ops. Please, for the love of God, get old Jack out of there. Casario, meanwhile, you know, he's got a little coaching experience. He's got a little scouting experience. He has been in every single part of the factory. I feel like that's a good place to look for when you're talking about a foreman or something else who's going to be in charge of your entire company.
I'm optimistic about Nick Casario. It concerns me that Josh McCown still was able to get another interview, because the only reason why that happens is because of the influence of Jack Easterby.
That's what I was going to say. And if it goes a step further, which is why when Jeremy's pushing for McCown to be the next head coach and saying that he's in his top three, and I'm saying that's the last thing you want, because that tells you that as much as Nick gave you a line of BS last week that Jack isn't involved in football anymore, that tells you the one guy that's really the most influential in football is Jack Easterby, because he's getting his guy McCown the job.
Yeah, that would not look good. But at the same time, I don't think it's the end of the world if you bring in a McCown. I don't.
No, I want him on the staff as a quarterback coach, or one day he could be the OC. I think he could be a good head coach at some point down the line.
He could have been your David Culley before David Culley, but because he wasn't, he can't be the next head coach of the Houston Texans.
Have him on the staff, sure, but if you're just going to hire Josh McCown, who has never coached in the NFL for a single year, like I don't know how you could sell the fan base that after you just ran David Culley out of town after a year.
See, this is the great thing, though, that the Texans have going for them. They can't sell anyone anything. You know? So at this point, I mean, what do you care about public opinion at this
But don't
point?
You want to sell hope, right? The idea that maybe you hired
you're
a coach.
You're getting better. You're making progress.
You have a top three pick. You have a
you have
quarterback.
All your draft picks back.
Davis Mills maybe could be the guy with some help next year. You don't know. Like, you could sell something. But if you hire Josh McCown.
He's got an asteroid, though. I mean, come on.
I get it. But you got to start somewhere. And if you hire Josh McCown, you look like even more of a clown show of an organization than you currently do.
Listen, you're not wrong about that. I just feel like, you know, this is kind of a perk of the Texans right now. We look so bad, it doesn't really matter. Like, screw it. Let's just do
it. But fans aren't going to – they're going to tolerate for a year or two, but they're not going to tolerate that long term.
They're not tolerating it now. Or are they? I mean, we saw the way that the end of the season looked.
We started the embrace the suck with the reason of being that, hey, you didn't have all your draft picks. You were in cap hell. O'Brien left you with a Grand Canyon-sized hole to fill. But now you want to see progress. Now you swung and missed, and Cal can't be happy about how much money is spent on a long-term deal for a coach that didn't work out. You don't have the leeway you used to have.
No. How many coaches does Nick get to hire, right? McCown doesn't work out. He gets a third coach.
Like, no way.
This coach has got to be the right guy. You can't just get rid of Culley after he wins four
games. That's why you can't experiment
with
McCown.
Yeah, you got to hire someone that's proven, or at least someone that doesn't have Patriot ties. Like, if they hire Jonathan Gannon, great. I don't know much about him, but I know he's not connected to the New England Patriots, which would excite me if I'm a Texas fan.
And at least someone's a coordinator before they get a head coaching job instead of a 17-year-old assistant.
How many hires does David Culley count as? Because I understand what we're saying, that David Culley, they hired
he's
him.
Like a half hire.
So. Well, yeah, because I mean, like, they weren't going to do any much. They weren't going to do any better than Culley.
I mean,
really
Jim Caldwell
so.
Wanted the job. You could have made Lovie Smith the head coach. You could have at least gave the job to Bieniemy, who was desperate for it.
You know, yeah,
I don't love him either, but
Leslie
my point
Frazier
is.
Leslie Frazier had head coaching experience.
Why didn't they just give it to Crennel? That's the one that I've had a conversation.
Because that didn't work out so well in Kansas City.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, like, you knew it was going to be interim, right?
But, like, with David Culley, it's like, all right, you went the non-Patriot way. You hired a guy no one's heard of. You got rid of him after a year, after most people looking at it from afar saw a terrible roster that he ended up winning four games with. You're going to get another coach if you're Nick Casario, and that coach you're going to bring in has even less experience than David Culley.
All right, we got to cut it there. What do you got coming up on the Wheelhouse?
Busy show. Joe Theismann is going to be joining us, former NFL MVP and Super Bowl champ at 4:30.
Joe loves some Joe.
Joe does love some Joe. Yes, he does. Yep. We'll talk about Sean Payton becoming, I think, maybe the next Bruce Arians, right? Go to broadcasting a couple years, get the itch to go back to become a coach. And then boom, Dallas Cowboys, New York Giants, who knows where he ends up. So we'll talk about that and more about this Texans coaching search.
And no more about slandering my boy Jeremy Branham. We want him back tomorrow, too. So let's just make sure we cut that.
Is he dodging Cody? Is that why he's out today? He couldn't look Cody in the eyes after Cody called his take stupid?
No, I think he's dodging other things that involve the facilities. That's what I think for the time being. All right, that's it for us. Appreciate my man Paulie Gallant filling in for Jeremy. Jeremy, get well soon. We need you back tomorrow. Brendan, of course, doing all the hard work behind the glass, though I question that from time to time. Jake Asman, The Wheelhouse, coming up next right here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5.